Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter the world of the unknown. There is a silent, invisible world that surrounds us all, a world we don't understand, a world that we wish to understand. And on Paranormal Horizons, we're going to explore this and hopefully get some answers. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for tuning into another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, joined with my talented co-host, Sherry Pang. Hello, Sherry.
Hey, Jason. How are you? It feels good to be back.
I'm doing okay. I'm a little concerned. There's some talk of some snow up here in Portland, Oregon, and I've got a little bit of a commute, so I'm hoping we don't get any snow because I don't have a four-wheel drive.
When's the snow coming in?
Somebody told me overnight, but it might just be a little bit of a dusting. But as beautiful as snow is to have, it makes it difficult to get to work. We had one year I had to chain up every time going to work. It was a nightmare. So hopefully I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, hopefully not. And I got to go right in. I've got some business to take care of, so I want to be out and about, too. but hopefully be back, before it gets really bad.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
A lot of busy. I've been sick, actually. I've just been, just got back and getting back into the bodybuilding. I felt weak. I had the touch of the flu. I did a 3-day stint at the International Cat Show. And did a lot of readings, and it was amazing, totally amazing. Gallery reading, a lot of healing, a lot of love, that kind of thing. But Sunday came down in the afternoon, coughing, and came home with a fever. And, I was in bed for a couple of days, so I'm just trying to get around now, honestly, just trying to get around feeling good. So, yeah, it's great. It's good to feel halfway decent now. But, yeah, just doing really good, and, I'm glad to be back on Paranormal Horizons.
Yeah, well, it's glad to get you back. I'm on the front lines with illness out there because I work in the hospital, and I'm telling you, it seems like every day I go to work, things are starting to pick up more and more with influenza and, a variety of respiratory illnesses. So everybody out there, wash your hands because things are starting to amp up a little bit out there in the sickness world.
Yeah, it is. And, sometimes even no matter what, all you can do is try and keep your immunities up as much as possible. And sometimes it's just airborne. You don't even have to be in direct contact with a person. It could just be in the air, just like you go to, a trip and you're in the airplane and, the airplane air is all recirculated air. So when you got people sneezing or all kinds of, kind of weird things, it's airborne. So you're going to catch it, especially if you're, have a chill or you're weak or, anything like that. It can be, it can play havoc to your system. That's why you see a lot of people after going on an airplane, they come home and oftentimes they're sick.
Immunology has always fascinated me. It's amazing how you can have one person that's exposed to a virus and doesn't get sick or has minimal symptoms, and somebody of the same age gets the same virus and it puts them on their deathbed. It's really fascinating. I've been blessed throughout my whole life to always have a really good immune system. I never get sick, but boy, man, some of those bugs out there are super, super nasty.
Yeah, and I think that, with the drugs and all these things, they're becoming very resistant to the things that are happening, so, you know, that can invade in your body. So I think the best thing you can do is just, number one, try and stay away from, you know, places that are more exposed, like hospitals and clinics and doctor's offices and dental offices and children, schools, you know, grocery stores. You know, sometimes it's a big plague of you know, having your hands on the shopping cart and you don't realize how much bacteria there is. And, you know, you can just catch it. You just never know. But, yeah, tonight we're going to have the returning Clyde Lewis. And those that who don't know who Clyde Lewis is, very internationally well-known person, spokesperson. He's going to be on the other side of radio tonight. Instead of being the host, he's going to be the guest. And we're just going to run the gamut, see what's interest of him to talk about. And just quickly, we might talk about the 23andMe really quickly, but he did talk about that on my show. It was very, very interesting. And, yeah, Clyde Lewis has over 50 syndicated, I don't know, I think it's 54, 56 or something, syndicated FM stations all throughout the U.S. and also.
Oh, it looks like Sherry's call just dropped. I think it's the National Security Agency trying to interrupt this broadcast. So hopefully Sherry will call right back. But it looks like, I think we got Clyde standing by, so we'll go ahead and bring him on while we wait for Sherry.
How's it
Clyde,
going?
Clyde, how's it going?
It's going okay. How are you?
Looks like we just doing good. Looks like we just lost Sherry. Her call dropped. But that's been a little while since you've been on the show, and I just want to thank you. I know how busy you are out there, and it's truly an honor to get you on our podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm pleased to be here. Thanks. It's a good opportunity to be here. Thank you.
So what's been, now Sherry mentioned something about 23andMe. I'm curious to hear about this because I actually did the 23andMe DNA test. I did the health part too. I was kind of impressed with it, but the concern that I have with any of these DNA tests is that they're potentially selling my DNA record, but I don't know. But I don't know, what's your take on that? What's going on with 23andMe?
Well, what happened was that they just made a deal with GlaxoSmithKline, and it was a $3 million deal. They were able to take some of the DNA, or at least most of the DNA in their database, and sell it to GlaxoSmithKline for what they call focused pharmaceuticals, and to focus on certain individuals. But there were also reports that a lot of this stuff goes into also creating things like extinction weapons. What extinction weapons are is that they focus primarily on certain types of DNA, certain types of ethnic groups, that sort of thing. They have the ability to do this now with genomics. They're able to create mutant strains of different viruses. They can create mutant strains of most anything. If you remember last year, there were 80,000 people that died from the flu. They said it was the flu, but reality is they did get the flu, but it morphed into something else. It mutated into a pneumonia of some kind. And so that's the situation. Is now we're seeing very strong strains that are popping up everywhere of the flu. Now we have the measles scare in Washington. There have been many other problems with these force multiplied strains of what they call it's gain of force type of diseases where or gain of function rather. A gain of function diseases where they release the gain of function disease into the populace. And then they try to find ways to cure it. It's kind of like they give it a trial run. They see exactly how people react to it, and then they go in and they either declare a national emergency or they actually go in and they find a way to give some sort of a inoculation or some sort of other thing to try and get rid of it. But, yeah, gain-of-function exercises are something the CDC has carried out for some time, and a lot of scientists, they don't like it, but, you know, it's just to try something. I mean, they did back in San Francisco in the 1950s with something called, I think it's called Serratia. They did Serration Mersenne's, and they released it in San Francisco in the 1950s because they wanted to test to see if it was a port city that could be a target for biological weapons. And they did that, and they had to, and then they actually were able to single out certain individuals with certain DNA strands because of the fact that, you know, they go and report that they have this disease and how they and how the body responded to it. So it's a very intricate process when they're dealing with stuff like this. So when you're dealing with groups like 23andMe, you spit, you send them the kit back, they send you some information, but they have your DNA on file for 10 years. And if you don't specify, they can do all kinds of things with it. Just like back in, I can't remember what year it was. It was 1950s or 1960s. There was a woman named Henrietta Lacks who had this super DNA, and they used it. And most things, it's called the H-E-L, like Henrietta Lacks, it's called the HeLa, that's what it's called, the HeLa DNA strand. And the HeLa DNA strand is being used for all kinds of things to this day to cure cancers and or actually to try and analyze cancers and cure biologicals and problems like that. They're using the HeLa DNA, and her family didn't get compensated. Nobody got compensated, and even her family gave their own blood tests because they wanted to see if the same type of DNA and stem cells could replicate, and they weren't compensated for that either. There was actually a documentary that was done on Netflix that had Oprah Winfrey in it talking about Henrietta Lacks and what happened with her DNA. It was a super DNA that she got that they took away from her out of her tissues from cervical cancer that she had. And it was really kind of a sad story that the family wasn't compensated for the DNA use.
So, yeah, I guess I did not read the fine print when I submitted my 23andMe kit.
Right.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I think you're right, because I was reading about that and Ancestry.com are one of the most, too. They breach your privacy like crazy.
Hi, Sherry. It's good to have you on.
Sorry,
yeah,
I got cut off. I didn't say hello because I got cut off. But, yeah, you're right. They do. And I don't know if you ever heard the other one. Is it Family Tree? My daughter had ordered one from Family Tree, and the reason why she had ordered that one is because they do protect your privacy. But I was reading an article the other day about Family Tree DNA. They're very good. I mean, very minute and very good with privacy. But they can hand over, if they suspect there's a murder, they can ask for a subpoena and ask to see your DNA to see if anything is linked to the murder. Isn't that crazy? They work with the FBI.
Well, there was a recent study. I can't remember the killer who it was, but they actually, in order to find this killer, they actually took the DNA of a man that was in a rest home in Oregon, and he couldn't say yes or no to it. They took the DNA because they thought he was a relative of this killer, and so they took the DNA to do matches. They've done that before, where they've used it for law enforcement, and they sell it. They sell the DNA for law enforcement as well. So, you know, you don't know where your DNA is being used. And, you know, here's the thing that's interesting, too, is it's not just DNA. It's not just that. They're doing something called bioharvesting, and they're doing DNA harvesting where there's a lot of DNA markers that they lack. And most of them are for African Americans. So they go into places like Malawi, and they go into places like South Africa and other places to actually harvest DNA from people of color. And you don't necessarily have to be a geneticist to do it. You can be like a geologist. You can be anything, and you can do it. You can be a missionary and actually go in there and do it. And they send that information back to these ancestry DNA companies, and so they're actually doing bioharvesting now, which is something that I believe is kind of it's unethical to do that to people, but they're doing it because they're so concerned about getting that DNA to certain pharmaceutical companies in order to do these tests and create these force multiply type of diseases and genetically mutated diseases.
Do you think that the government has our best interest when they're doing these things, like when they released the pathogen in San Francisco? I mean, is this for the long-term good, or is there some nefarious reason why they're doing all these things?
Well, they claim it's for national security. They claim that's what they claimed the last time. They did that in San Francisco. They claim they did it because they wanted to figure out if San Francisco was a target city, and so that's why they did it. And of course, they found that it was a targeted city, and that it could be a target city in some sort of a biological attack. And so they have the Health and Human Services Act and several other things. They can act a state of emergency and say, well, we have to test people involuntarily. We can force inoculations. We can do all kinds of things. And that's why I'm very concerned about the measles outbreak in Washington, because what they were planning on doing, I think it was called H.R. Bill 526. I don't know if that's the right bill. I don't have it in front of me. But Kate Brown here in the state of Oregon said that they wanted to visit, have agents and or social workers visit families with newborns and have them report to them about inoculations, about vaccinations, about how the baby is being treated. And I look at that as kind of a Fourth Amendment violation where, you know, they come in, they spy on your household to find out if you're actually doing well with your child. And, you know, it's kind of it's sort of these things that they want to do in the name of public safety. And that's why they do them.
I think vaccines are generally good. I had to get a bunch of vaccines to work in a hospital, but I don't know if I'm like full on conspiracy theory about the vaccines. I declined the flu shot just because I'd never had the flu before, but I just don't have enough information regarding vaccines to really come up with an opinion on it.
No, I'm not completely anti-vaccine either. I mean, you know, there's certain vaccinations that I think people should get, but there are a lot of opportunity vaccines that I see come around, and the flu is one of them. Out of the 80,000 that died last year, the CDC basically kept the numbers low, and then after that, they said something to the effect that 80,000 died, but what they didn't say was that the vaccine that they had was not effective for the type of flu that was mutating. And that's one of the reasons why it was ineffective, is because they had the wrong vaccine for the wrong flu, and it took them by surprise. But as I said, the flu, people got the flu, and then it mutated into a pneumonia or some sort of a cytokine, bacterial disorder, and that's why it hurt people.
I've been seeing a lot of pneumonia in the hospital. It's pretty scary stuff. I declined mine. I had talked to about half the people I talked to about the flu shot. Half of them said it made them sick. And I was just like, well, you know, I just don't feel comfortable getting it. So, you know, I have to wear a mask around the hospital and I look kind of stand out. But, you know, I don't mind. I'd rather wear a mask than get the flu shot. That's just my opinion on it.
Well, I more power to people if they want to get a flu shot. I mean, people with, compromised immune systems probably should get it. And, you know, maybe younger people should get it if you don't want them to come down and be very debilitated by it. I mean, before I had my surgeries, I had to have a pneumovax. And it was a pneumovaccine that I had. And I remember when I got it, it made me feel horrible. But I didn't get sick. It just made me feel horrible once I got it. And I asked the nurse, I said, wow, does it make everybody feel like that? She says, yes, some people have worse reactions. So, I mean, I don't know what I had put into me, but I'll tell you this much. You know, it's kept me from having really severe, pneumonia symptoms since then, and it's been effective. But they did it, you know, out of precaution so that I wouldn't get pneumonia in the hospital because most people, you know, they go in for a very simple procedure, and they wind up getting either a staph, strep, or even a pneumonia infection when they're in the hospital. So it's a protection. There's a lot of things that, you know, when you have vaccines, they're there for protection. But then, of course, you know, back when we had Baxter International and several other companies that were financing political candidates, and so all of a sudden it became a political issue as to whether or not you were getting your flu shot. And one of the problems I have is when the technocracy tends to become political, and so you get, you know, all kinds of programs back in the early days when this type of stuff became political, you wound up with eugenics programs. You wound up with sterilizing certain individuals because they didn't have the right kind of, IQs. I mean, these types of things were said to help the population. And what's funny is that everybody talks about Nazi Germany and how they had these really horrible eugenics programs. Well, they got their information and their ideas for the eugenics programs from us. We were doing some very bad eugenics operations here in this country, even before Hitler came around. And so, you know, eugenics was a popular thing at the turn of the 20th century. And then it kind of got a bad word. Now they call it social engineering. It's the social engineering programs that they do. And it's doing things like taking DNA and using DNA. And right now, too, they're doing things like facial recognition and biometrics and all these other things that go with it. And so it's for the progress of the states, for the progress of the nation. But in the same time, there's that slippery slope where you're saying, well, there is room for abuse, and there is room for having your DNA sold to somebody like GlaxoSmithKline for some sort of a trial for some other drug or some other drug that's suited for a certain type of ethnic group or blue-eyed, blonde-haired, or blue-eyed, brown-haired people. You know, that they just basically can single people out for that.
There's so much stuff going on behind the scenes that we're not, made aware of. I just can't help but think we're just becoming more and more of a police state, and it's all about the money. These large corporations selling, advertising or genetics or whatever. It's kind of scary, but I still don't think it's as bad as China. I've been hearing some pretty scary things coming out of China in terms of, Big Brother over there.
Oh, and here's something else. My wife Janine is really, she's very smart when it comes to connecting dots. And she's working on pharmacology. She's working on environment. She's so involved in all these wonderful things to try and change the ecosystem. And one of her biggest, causes is advocacy. She's an advocate for the idea of taking the pharmaceuticals out of the water or even out of the urine of people and basically reconstituting it. Well, in her studies, and one of the things she found out about me is, see, after I had my surgeries, now this is what's interesting. After I had my surgeries, I gained a lot of weight, and I never have been. I mean, people who see me know that I'm very heavy right now, and it's something that I'm not very proud of, but it's something that was out of my control. And what had happened is that Janine, ever since we've been married, well, even before we've been married, she's been studying the fact that, well, I have a disorder that's a genetic disorder called TSC complex, which is called tuberous sclerosis. Well, one of the things that she realized about something as simple as lisinopril, which is a drug that everybody takes for high blood pressure, she found out that when men take it, they leptins are they basically become the leptins get into the body and they're part of the body. And what it does is it stunts the leptins and it creates something. It makes prolactin in the body. And what prolactin is what women get after they have babies. But men get prolactin, okay, in their bodies. Now, here's the deal. And Janine may be onto something really important, and this is what's funny, because we were talking about this today. Here's the deal. So why do men have ED? They have ED because they're getting too much prolactin in their system because they're on blood pressure medications like lisinopril. Why are men not as sexually active? Why are we not procreating? Because men are getting prolactin in their system. And here's another thing. There's something called blastome, which is basically, not to be offensive or anything, man boobs or moobs. Men get these because they take lisinopril, which creates prolactin, and so men, they grow breasts like a woman because that's what women get after they're pregnant, is they get bigger breasts, and it's a 5 to 6 year process, and so it takes about, and a lot of men go on this product and they don't even question it. Women go on this product and they don't question it. But men, this may be the reason why we're having premature ED. Oh, and they lose their hair too. Women do. When women get prolactin in their bodies, they start losing their hair after they're pregnant because they start losing their hair. Men lose their hair when they have too much prolactin. Men lose their ability to have erections. Men lose their ability to have muscle. Muscle mass goes away. They start getting breasts like women, and they're all figuring out, well, why do I have this low testosterone? Why do I have ED? is because they're giving you high blood pressure medications like lisinopril, and they're treating people like guinea pigs. And these men don't know why they're sick. They don't know why they have low T, and it's because of this.
And I'm pretty sure the pharmaceutical companies. I'm sure the pharmaceutical companies are fully aware of this, huh? And they don't care because they're just making money, you know. Eh, who cares if there's side effects like that?
Well, see, they want to make money fast. And most of the times when a drug goes out on the market and they say, here are all your side effects, they test it on rats first. But then after they have the trials, they throw it out into the public without and the people, once again, it's a gain-of-function exercise. And the people are not even – they don't test it on people. They do these trials, and then they put it out on the market. And there's stuff on the market that's been tested. It's caused things like cancers. And I remember Androgel, which is a testosterone product that men rub on their shoulders, gives blood clots to men. And that was on the market. And they had a class action lawsuit. There's actually a drug called Xeralto, where they're still selling it. See, I take a Pixaban, which is the opposite of Xeralto. But Xeralto apparently causes the very thing that they make it for, causes strokes.
Wow.
And you know, Pixaban can do that. I mean, and see, this is the stuff. But yeah, Janine, I mean, she's been telling me this for years, and today she broke it down for me in such a way that was so, I mean, you know, sometimes she has to break things down to me on a fourth grade level for me to even understand it. And the thing is that I don't even think it was fourth grade. I think that she was being very clear, and her research was sound on this, about how there's a reason why men are gaining weight, they're getting low T, and they're getting man breasts is because they're taking things like lisinopril that create prolactin in the body, and men don't know why. They just get frustrated. And so what, they're going out and they're getting testosterone shots. And what do testosterone shots do? They give you heart attacks. And so we have men dying of heart failure at young ages. We got men who are popping Viagra like nobody's business, and they die of heart failure from taking Viagra, and they're taking lisinopril. Why? To protect them from heart failure. And it doesn't happen because you end up dying from heart failure. It doesn't make any sense.
I work in a medical laboratory, so I see all these blood tests, and I always wondered when I worked in a large medical laboratory, I would see men being tested for prolactin, and I always go, why are they being tested for prolactin? I thought that was just for women. Well, now that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, isn't she onto something? I mean, when she said that to me, because, you know, that's one of the things that I've always been curious about, is that why all of a sudden I started gaining weight, and it's because I was given lisinopril and hydrochlorothiazide mix for my blood pressure. I was just taking Clonidine. I was taking Clonidine for a while for blood pressure. And all of a sudden I said, oh, well, try this new product called lisinopril. Well, ever since I've tried lisinopril, I've gained weight. I've been tired a lot. My testosterone's dropped. And I thought it's just because I had my surgery. But now, after listening to Janine and her research on lisinopril, I'm beginning to realize that that's what they're doing, is they're making men infertile with this drug. Did you know that they did a what they call a statistical find, and they said that the United States right now, men and women are not having enough children in order to replace the population, which means that we have a high mortality rate and we have a low birth rate. Now, why is it that we have a low birth rate? Well, there are a number of reasons. One, it's a lot of money to have a baby. Two, relationships now with men and women are becoming more sterile than they are being loving. Men are becoming impotent at early ages. They have ED at early ages. We're finding propaganda that tells us that it's best not to have children. But the truth is we have minorities, or two. There are two states, New Mexico and Utah, where they're able going to replace the population. Now in New Mexico, of course, you have a Latino group that will replace the population in New Mexico. Utahns, Mormons, of course, believe in having big families, and so this is why I'm sure the population in Utah can be replaced. But everywhere else in the country, there's zero population growth. We are going to be, especially when it comes to white Americans, white females, and white males, we're going to be obsolete in the next few years.
Hmm. Wow, I didn't realize that was going to be that bad, but that makes sense, though. It really does.
Well, yeah, and when you're dealing with leptin resistance, your leptin is, if your leptin is high, you get fatter. but your brain can't see it. Your brain doesn't understand it because your brain doesn't feel like it. And I told Janine when we discussed my weight at one time, I said, I don't know why this happened. It just came on to me suddenly. And she said, oh, it just came on to you suddenly. And she didn't understand this. Now she understands why, because of the situation of leptins and prolactin. And you said yourself about prolactin. Men are being tested for prolactin increases, and it's because of lisinopril. It has to be by that. So if you got leptin, it stimulates the pituitary glands, the prolactin and the pituitary glands, and then we have extracellular signal-regulated kinase-dependent pathways that go through the body, and men become it goes through the brain. Men become inert. They become they don't have interest in sex. They don't have interest in anything. They just want to be lazy and sleepy and tired, and they don't do anything. And that seems to be – you hear, like, hi, I'm Dr. Arkaki from the men's clinic. And he gets – he says, if you're feeling tired, it may be because of low T. Or it may be that you're making prolactin because you have a drug going through your body that hasn't been tested. And it's giving men this problem. And that's because they just don't test. And our population is dying in the process. Men are dying at early ages from heart failure because they're not being protected because of the fact that they're getting more estrogen and they're becoming tired.
Wow. It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it is. And it's something that, you know, I'm sure I'll do a show on, or I'll invite Janine on to do a show on with me, because it was her discovery. And I realized that, you know, she's probably, if not all right on about this, because it makes perfect sense to me. It just hit me that it made a lot of sense to me today. So
that's,
I think we're definitely becoming over-medicated. What kills me is when you're watching television and, you know, something comes on, somebody's promoting a drug for some minor thing like acne or like that, and then it lists the side effect, death, stroke, schizophrenia, worshiping the devil, whatever. It's like, why would you want to put that in your body for a minor issue when the potential side effects can be dire or even fatal?
Well, because people are desperate for help. They're desperate for that, I think, Holy Grail smoking gun, Fountain of Youth thing. I think that's pretty much what it is. And, you know, they don't think about the side effects. I mean, you look at something like Lyrica, for example. You take Lyrica, you kind of, if you don't have a strong immune system, you shouldn't be taking Lyrica, because it can weaken your immune system.
But it also, you know, it's not only affecting us humans, but it's also affecting our pets. I was reading an article that there's this veterinarian, and he refuses to come clean as far as his name because he doesn't want his practice to be in jeopardy. But he is, you know, having animals. He says he only wants to vaccinate a dog or a cat one time for rabies. He said it's unnecessary to vaccinate them every 3 years. He says it's an overload on the system. And when you see these cats or dogs that are over-vaccinated, you'll understand why I feel the way I do. And I believe it, because it makes sense. He's not there to make money. He's there to do what is the necessary thing to keep the cats alive and protecting them, and also your canines too. He said vaccines.
Well, and like I said before,
lifetime.
Well, like I've said before, you know, you look at vaccines, and there are vaccines. Like, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm a person who I think is – I believe people should be vaccine aware. And I think they should know what they're putting in their bodies and what is hype and what isn't hype. You know, they use fear hype to get you to go out and use one of these vaccines, when in reality, you know, getting an immunity to it is better than going in and always getting your – immune system compromised with a vaccine. You know, there's certain vaccines, yeah, that you're going to need, like measles, mumps, rubella, those types of things. For kids, but, you know, even now, you know, this measles outbreak, kids were inoculated against measles, and they're still getting measles. Now, why is that? Well, they say, well, because apparently they need to get a booster. No, apparently a measles shot was supposed to work, and this is just one more way of making money off of people who don't know the truth about pharmaceuticals and know the truth about, you know, what's happening. You know, I'm kind of, I really am grateful, actually, and very, I guess you could say, I get an inside scoop when Janine is doing this type of study in college, and she's bringing this to my attention, and it just helps me understand even more just how badly, you know, we certainly are being treated with regards to how vaccines and how certain drugs are being put on the market without testing, and how they wind up in our urine and they wind up in our water supply. And in fact, when you bring up the idea of reconstituting and bringing it back, everybody I've talked with says it's a wonderful idea.
So, Clyde, let me ask you, what do you think about the idea of, like, you know, with the Willamette River being so polluted? I mean, you get these nice, you know, houseboats that, oh, I have a houseboat over on the river, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, it may be nice, but look at the water. You can't even put your hand in there, let alone go and fish. Come on.
Yeah, well, you know, you look at that, and yes, the waters are contaminated, but what are they contaminated with? They're contaminated with waste. They're contaminated with a lot of things. But see, we have never in our history, probably you can go back, what would we say, 8 years, maybe 10 years ago, back when, you know, Barack Obama was president, and he was basically Big Pharma's BFF. And the reason why he was because Baxter International, GlaxoSmithKline, Squibb, even Monsanto Bayer, they were putting money in his pocket. And you look at people like Bill Gates, and you look at the Department of Justice. They were a revolving door for Big Pharma. And Big Pharma would go in and say, well, here's the deal. If you get a vaccine and you end up getting hurt by that vaccine, guess what? You can't sue. They made a law where you can't sue or be rewarded. And so Obama rewards his Big Pharma friends for contributing to his campaign. And yet we still have this lingering cause where people are saying, even after the Obama administration, you know, get a vaccine here, get a vaccine there. And they stress the vaccines because that was the habit. And if you go back in time and you remember half the time this was going on, people were saying, you don't need this. You don't need to have this. Your immune system can work for it. And we'd have people come on from the CDC saying, it's not a conspiracy. Get your damn vaccine. Talking to us like that. And I'm thinking, why the heck are you telling us to get our damn vaccines when we got our vaccines and we get some of the simple ones, but now they want you to get one for shingles, or they want you to get one for, you know, something else. And it's like, why would you want to get one for shingles? Everyone has the capability of getting shingles. And there's nothing that, you know, even if you get a vaccine, you probably end up getting, because it's part of the chicken pox vaccine or part of the chicken pox disease. So none of this makes sense. And you know, when people sit there and they tell me, well, we're very surprised you speak about vaccines the way you do. No, I never tell people not to go out and get vaccines, but I tell people to be vaccine aware. Be aware of DNA. Be aware of what Zbigniew Brzezinski called the technotronic surveillance state with medical. They went out and they created a medical surveillance state. That's all this nationwide healthcare is supposed to be for. And we'll get it eventually, because all they have to do is just run a few things, run a few tests, run a few background checks on you. And, you know, and what they do is they say, well, here, come get this vaccine. And what the vaccine is part of this outdated supply that's been distributed. And here's another thing too. The Bill Gates and Melinda Gates foundations would go into Malawi, and they would actually go in and they would sterilize families from having kids. And then they would take the kids that were born, and at gunpoint, they'd have them get vaccines. So they could give this, you know, horribly produced product with mercury and other things in it, and put it in the kids for population control. Now tell me this isn't evil.
It sure sounds evil to me. I mean,
yeah.
I think the direction everything going is pretty scary as we become more surveilled, and it sounds like we're being more and more surveilled on the medical front. I would imagine the government has a way to look at your medical records. I mean,
well, yeah, they run them. I mean,
within reach.
Well, whenever you hear, like, for example, of a woman, there was a woman one time that actually crashed the gates of the White House accidentally. Her name was Miriam Curie. I remember her name well because it was a horrible story. She had turned into the East Gate. They told her to stop her car. She didn't. Security fired on her. So she gunned the gas and headed down Pennsylvania. They stopped on Pennsylvania and they executed her. They took the baby out of the car and they shot the woman. And after they shot her and everything, they said that she was a terrorist. And what had happened is they said that They said she was a terrorist, but then they went back to, into her records and said she had postpartum depression after giving birth to a child. Now, I don't want my records on the news if they're going to say bad things about me like this. I wouldn't be able to handle it. But they'll do it.
Well, I guess all the government has to say is it's for national security, and they can pretty much get or do whatever they want.
If they ever accuse somebody of committing a crime, they can say, well, he had a record of, you know, depression, or he had a record of this, or he had a record of that, and or he didn't get a certain vaccine, or he didn't do this, or he didn't do that. And see, that's the thing, is that they're using things like vaccines, if you don't get your vaccine, or they're using things like, for example, opiates. You know, Lord help you if you OD, or you find your, if you have a heart attack in your sleep. I had this conversation with my doctor. He said, let's say you have a heart attack in your sleep, and they find you, and they find out that you take opiates, or you've taken things like oxycodone, for example. All they have to do is file a report saying that you OD'd on oxycodone, and immediately it's a moral failing. People look at ODing on any kind of opiate as a moral failing, when in reality, people take opiates all the time. They take them responsibly, and even opiate use is down in the United States, yet they say there's an opioid epidemic. There's no such thing as an opioid epidemic. It's an overdose epidemic. People are overdosing because they're depressed or they're in pain and they're not getting pain management. The only opioid crisis we're having is the what's that drug called? Forgot the name. I just drew a blank on the name of the drug. It's not propofol. It's the other one.
Fentanyl.
Fentanyl. It's the fentanyl problem.
Yeah.
It's the cheap heroin problem. That's the problem. But no, they make people who are responsible with their opioids sound like opiate overdosees or overdosers. And so the whole country goes around saying, well, we're going to cut back on people who need these medications when opiate use is down. And then, of course, they schedule one cannabis. They take cannabis and they schedule one. And people are afraid to use CBD for topical usage to help their aches and pains because they're afraid they're going to get busted by the federal government. And this doesn't make any sense because because cannabis is an addictive and it's safer for you to use than opiates.
Well, I guess that probably takes money out of big pharma.
Certain states open to having CBD oil for people that are experiencing pain, and there are states where it's still prohibiting that kind of thing to help people with chronic pain.
Well, there are, I think, Donald Trump lifted the stigma with regard to federal prohibition of CBD made from hemp. So you can have CBD made from hemp, but anything with THC in it is still federally Schedule I. So you have to be careful if you get CBD with THC in it. It has to be, you know, in the state of Oregon, of course, it's legal, but only state. I mean, federal, you still have problems. That's why a doctor will test you for marijuana usage because they operate on a federal level. And so if you're using marijuana along with your opiates, you could lose your opiates. You could lose using your pain pills because they'll say, well, we found marijuana in your system, and so we will not issue any more pain pills.
That's awful.
That's
horrible.
Crazy.
Right.
So you could
theoretically. You probably see that all the time, Jason, huh, when there are people, you know, that are in pain and everything.
Oh, yeah, but I don't know. Everything seems overprescribed. I know that doctors now are afraid or reluctant to prescribe opiates, you know, because I think the restrictions were really clamped down. So now there are a bunch of people that are legitimate non-abusers that are in pain but can't get treatment for it. And then they end up, you know, potentially being suicidal because nobody will listen to them.
Yep. Well, it's because of this propaganda. It's bad propaganda. I talked to my doctor about this. He agrees. When you have everything being thrown together and they're telling you, you know, there's an opiate crisis, when they don't say what opiates are the crisis problems, and we're talking about cheap heroin, we're talking about fentanyl. And, you know, I did a show one time about Crocodile, which was a very cheap $10 heroin high you could get. But your body would, like, basically turn to zombie flesh. And I talked about it on the air, and I said, here's something that you need to make sure your kids don't get involved with. And this one guy called me. He was 75 years old, and he said, Clyde, he said, kids aren't going to touch this. And I said, well, how do you mean? And he said, no, people like me are going to use it. And I said, what are you talking about? And he says, I'm 75 years old. I was in a motorcycle crash. My doctor cut me off from my opiates. He says, I'm a heroin user. And he said, if I can get heroin cheap, if it's making, stovetop heroin in the back room, and if it's crocodile, hell, I'll do it if it'll get me out of pain. And so he says, the problem will not be with your kids. The problem will be with older people who have suffered very, very bad accidents where they've been in pain, chronic pain their whole lives, and not able to get any relief from their pain because the doctors are taking it away. There are three things. I remember Robert Anton Wilson, I interviewed him once, and he said to me, he says, Clyde, he says, there are three things that if you were to do this, you would be the best president of the United States. He said, what you do is you offer people clean water. You make sure that your country has clean water. Then he said, you got to make sure that the food that your country has in it is nutritional. More nutritious food, more garden vegetables, more organic foods, less of hormonal, all the other bad things for food. You have really good food. He says, and the third thing, keeping people out of pain. And that means physical pain and emotional pain. If you can do those three things, you would be the best leader in the whole world, and a country would thrive. But all of the things that that he talked about, the government makes sure that you don't have good food. They make sure you don't have clean water, and they make sure that you do not have you're not out of pain. And that's why I really admire my wife, because she is right now looking into how to change the water, how to make the water clean again, make it good. She practices good nutrition. That's why she's cured herself of her cancer. She went on my show the other night and she said, this is how I did it. And she gave everybody advice on how to do it. She said, she went with the colloidal golds or the colloidal silvers and chlorella and Wuji, I guess it's called Wuji. All of these things she used to get better. She did this fast for 7 months and it reversed a lot of her cancer. And these are the things that, people always laugh at and say it's quackery. But no, the results are in. If you can at least find the core reason why people are getting cancer, the core reason why they're getting diabetes, and the core reason why men are becoming less fertile, dying at young ages, I think that we'll be able to beat this. But the government wants to cull us. They're looking for zero population. They want a manageable population of about 500 million. And so that means they have to wipe out a lot of people. I mean, wars wipe out people, plagues wipe out people. But when you have too many people, you got to find ways to get them to not populate, and you got to get them to find ways to eat things that are going to kill them.
That's wild. I've always heard the story about population reduction, and I guess the way they're doing it makes sense. It's kind of below the radar. Nobody thinks about it. Let's just over-medicate everybody, and it'll let it sort itself out.
You know what an iatrogenic artifact is, right?
What artifact?
An iatrogenic artifact.
I've never heard of that.
An iatrogenic artifact is when the doctor gives you a cure, and it ends up killing you or ends up making the matter worse. And there are hundreds of thousands of people every year that die from iatrogenic artifacts.
Wow.
And so what people do is you look at what analysis shows us. And what we see is that we need to find ways to treat these disorders, whatever they may be, the drug disorders. They are not criminal disorders. They are disorders of the body that need to be addressed in a medical way. And so if you incarcerate people and you don't give them the right nutrition, you don't give them the right foods, you don't give them the alternatives, mental psychiatric alternatives, they are set up to fail. And when you have a system that's set up to fail, you start seeing the degenerative process. You start seeing people divide and get anger amongst one another. And you see the homeless. What they're doing to the homeless, too. You see a lot of people out on the street, using drugs. And you find homelessness, you find despair. And you know what the biggest killer is right now is depression. Despair and depression is killing people right now because the pain is so overwhelming that people are finding ways to check out. And like I said, we have a high mortality rate of young men. Young midlife men are dying And there's no reason for this. They haven't found a reason for it, but I'm sure it has to do with pharmaceuticals.
Well, because everybody's taking trilistic antidepressants.
Right.
Literally. I mean,
right.
It's so rampant. You know, you go to your doctor and say you're having some anxiety or you're slightly depressed, and they're like, here, you know, take these pills. Like, alter your brain chemistry, and Lord knows what else it does. And God forbid you run out of pills and can't refill it, because then you're going to throw your brain completely out of whack.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't you think they should be responsible? I mean, the doctors and the medical association, they're supposed to help people, and they put these, you know, patients or you and I in a vicious cycle. Shouldn't they be responsible for that?
It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming, and there's money to be made. If there's money to be made, they have secrets that they keep from the people, and they get class action lawsuits, but nothing gets done. There's no funding to prevent this. There's no money to prevent this. I mean, the pharmaceutical countries are out of control. Look, they're doing a class action lawsuit right now against Monsanto and Bayer. Do you think that that's going to go over well? Well, they had their first round against Roundup. The guy had cancer. But what other class actions are going to bring down Bayer and Monsanto? Bayer was a chemical company that basically created Zyklon B, which exterminated the Jews, and Monsanto was a company that created Agent Orange. What makes you think that they're going to care about people now? They're not going to care. They just want to make money off of the people, and not only do they make money off you coming, they make money off you going. You know, you die and you come and go. It's the way it is.
You pay an arm and a leg each way, huh?
Each way, yeah. Coming in, going, you know,
exactly.
It's just horrible.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And not only that, I mean, look at this also. When you're looking at population control, look what happened in New York recently. They said now they can abort babies up to birthday. You know, a baby on its birthday could be aborted and killed right when it comes out of the mother. And they will not prosecute anymore for anybody who kills a woman who has an unborn baby. They used to make it a double count of murder, but they won't now. They've changed that now. So now, you know, we're able to kill babies right when they're born if we want to. And that's something that, you know, I can't believe they passed that law. You know, I don't really get into abortion arguments with people because I think a woman has a right to choose. I've always felt that way. But when it gets to a point where the baby is ready to be born and right when it comes out, they basically crush its head with forceps, I get a little angry about that.
Oh, I can't believe that's even possible that somebody would create a bill like that. That's terrible.
Oh, it's a law now. It's a law, and they did it on the day of Roe v. Wade.
Oh.
I think it was kind of also significant. But, yeah, it's law in New York now. A woman can have an abortion up to birth date, up to the day of birth.
So you wonder if these people are psychopathic themselves that add, you know, make up these rules.
Population control. By 2030, they wanted the population to be stable. It's about sustainability. It's about scarcity. It's about, you know, it's a eugenics exercise. Only the fit shall survive. Only the ones they see fit will survive. The ones that have the genetic markers will survive. And when you look
that
at
they
what,
see
you look,
fit.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest health crises of all right now is division and violence. You know, we have people that are triggered by something as simple as a MAGA hat. We have people that are triggered for something as simple as blackface. And I know that it's not good. I know it's not good to have people in blackface. But, you know, the three leading causes of death in the United States for people ages 15 to 34 are intentional injuries, suicides, and homicides. And that's what's happening is we're killing each other. And we're killing babies, we're killing each other, and we're taking drugs. I mean, how are we going to look at this? We're going to look at this as a psychological disorder and the perfect possession of a country, the perfect possession of a nation state. It's the cycle of violence. And we need to educate people about what brings this cycle of violence on and how we cannot continue it. We've got to cut it off. We've got to stop it.
And how do you think we can do that, Clyde? What do you think is your opinion and what we can do to help?
I think we need to draw from national, we draw from national recall. We draw from national history. We find the times where we do agree on things. We find the times where we have agreed on things in the past. But the thing is, we got to get a media, and we got to get a group of powerful people to get educated and to move forward, get educated in things where the world is going to be better, not educated in selfish things, but be educated in things where you're going to do your part and change the world in some little way. Because even though you may not think you make a difference, you make a big difference in everything you do. When you go out and you try to learn and you try to help, I think the worst thing we can do right now is get involved in political disputes and banters and problems when there are bigger issues right now, bigger enemies out there to fight, and they're against them. And we need a lot of family support. We need a lot of love and attitude and well-being. We need to be able to hold each other, hug each other. And you know what else we need? We need connection. We lack social cohesion because of social media now. We have no, people reaching out to people, connecting, hugging, talking. You know, these things aren't happening anymore. People are set in just being, set in being in their own world and going on social media and bullying people. It's not happy. It's not good.
It's amazing how divided everything's become. You know, it's all about conflict and creating conflict. And like you said, we're so distracted with technology and social media, and it's definitely not a good direction. And we have to do what we can to, create new connections and nurture existing ones, because we are so out there.
Ask someone directly how they feel about. What are their feelings about love and well-being? And they won't be able to tell you. They'll tell you exactly what they're against, but when you tell them, so tell me a little bit about what you think is good for love and well-being. What is it that you support? What is it that you value? What is it that you give emotional support towards? What is it that you are for rather than what you're against? People will tell you right off the bat what they're against. They'll tell you politically what they hate. They'll tell you all this, but they won't tell you their feelings about what love will bring. They don't tell you about the feelings about what emotional support would bring. Nobody reaches out to pet a cat, have a cat, pet a cat. You know what happens when you pet a cat? You get something called oxytocin. And oxytocin is something that people lack. It's that ability to connect. Think of that feeling you get when you rub a cat and you pet a cat. It's just a nice feeling of love. We don't get that enough. Or what about when you hug someone you really care about? Someone, when you fall into their arms, you have the magic. Or you just give a hug to someone else. You know, just give a hug on a smile. Tell somebody how happy you are to see them. That kind of warmth is what people need, and they don't do it anymore. We'd much rather yell at somebody in our car for pulling out in front of us rather than having a sense of humor about things. rather than lightening up a bit. You on the internet, you say a joke, and people take it so seriously they want to bully you. It's all about bullying and being angry at one another, and it's not good.
Yeah, and it is in public display. When you were talking about that, I think of the kids where, you go to the store or bank or anything like that, and the mother is yelling at her kids, and instead of, being an example themselves, explaining what is appropriate and what isn't and this and that, they're just like bunch of wild animals that are screaming and yelling and wondering why their offspring are a bunch of wild little hoodlums,
Worst thing I hear a mother say to her kids, I'll give you something to cry for. Like, really? They're already crying. You want them to cry more? That just defeats the purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Just defeats the purpose.
I know.
Get a cat.
You know what I'm doing right now is I'm rubbing the belly of a fat cat. He's so cute. His name is Rusty Bucket. And he's cute. Yeah, he's adorable.
Aww. Jason, do you have any kitty cats?
I got five cats. I petted one today repeatedly, and I'm pleased to report that my oxytocin levels are off the charts.
Oh, that's good. I'm having oxytocin high
that's
right
great.
Now. Not only am I petting cats, I'm seeing my smiling wife standing in the wall, and that's cool too. So I get oxytocin.
Wait, what about dogs? Do they have the same effect? Dogs,
of
do they have the
they
same
do.
Effect? I imagine they would. So any pet, really.
Can you imagine how happy you are when a dog comes and licks your face? You don't care how much disease they have on their tongues. You just want them to lick your face.
Yeah, they live.
Well, we
love unconditionally. Animals do, and they speak the truth. That's for sure.
And one more thing that gives you oxytocin: chicken pot pie. That's the thing. You get yourself a Marie Callender's chicken pot pie, and eat it slowly on a winter's night, and you'll feel good about yourself. It's kind of cool.
Damn, those pot pies are pretty good too.
I used to hate them. Now I love them. I think they're kind of nice.
How did you go from hating them to loving them?
When I was a kid, I was giving them all the time, and then one day I was, when I was recovering from whatever it is that was making me sick back in the day, I saw a commercial, some furniture commercial, that had this big chicken pot pie sitting in the furniture store, and I thought, man, that sounds good, and so I kind of went and bought me like a 24-pack of chicken pot pies and lived on them for a while. I was very happy at how much they made me feel good. So there are a lot of things that make you feel good. I mean, ice cream makes you feel good. Banana splits make you feel good. They're not good for you, but they make you feel good, you know? So.
Well, Clyde,
Go
ahead, Jerry.
I was going to say, think about it if it's organic, right? It's a good alibi to eat that stuff if it's organic.
Yeah.
Well, we are running out of time.
Right.
I want to thank you again, Clyde, for coming on. It's truly an honor to get you on here, and it's been very entertaining. And hopefully we can get you back on in the future.
Well, what you should do is I think that, yeah, I would love to come on, but I think that maybe you should talk to my wife about her wonderful theories and ideas that she has because, you know, she also is, you know, she's working hard too. And I think she's got some wonderful ideas. And, you know, she inspires me. And so, you know, it's just always, it's a good thing.
Do.
Yeah, she's great.
Sherry,
we are. Love her.
5 minutes and people say, when's she coming back on?
I'm gonna be talking to her. I told her she's going to come back
on.
Okay,
good.
She's also going to come back on my other radio show. So, yeah, that would be great.
Awesome.
Excellent. Yay. It's all helping each other. It's all about marketing and helping each other and spreading the love and spreading the good works that we do for each other and the world. That's all we can do.
Right.
And Clyde, for the listeners who want to learn, if maybe they're not already listening to Ground Zero, but I think pretty much everyone listens to Ground Zero because it's fantastic, where can they go about learning more about the show or listening to it?
Well, you can either go to my website and read my articles, which would be boring, or you can go to soundcloud.com/groundzeromedia, groundzeromedia.org, soundcloud.com/groundzeromedia. I have a new series out called How the World Will End. That can be found on KXL.com. It's a podcast that I do. It's pretty amazing about, you know, certain things that can make the world end at any moment. But that's about all I'm doing right now. I'm working on another project soon called Aftermath. We'll have a whole library dedicated to Ground Zero. And so that'll be something you may want to be involved with. Really cool, too.
Oh, very
awesome.
Good. How many, out of curiosity, how many episodes of Ground Zero have you done?
Oh, my gosh. I've been doing it now. Well, I've been doing it national now since 2012. And I've been doing it now for about 24 years. So, I mean, it'll be 25 years in 2020. 25 years in 2020 I'd be doing it. I did in 1995. Isn't that 25 years, 2020? I started in 1995.
Yeah.
So, and I, you know, and I got better at it as I did it. So, I don't know why anybody even listened to me then, but it seems like it's getting better and better. And I got a lot of help from wonderful people.
You get better with
my wife, my producers, Ron. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I remember when I first was on air, I was so nervous. I can't believe I was stuttering and anyways, the people would say anyways, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you get used to it.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't bite. I'm just a big, you know, marshmallow. That's what I am.
Well, you're a very talented radio show host, Marshmallow, there.
There you go. Thank you.
All right, Clyde. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll get Janine on hopefully in the near future because I'd love to hear about all that stuff with the water and the drugs. And thank you again for taking your personal time to come on the show.
Sure, no problem. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, take care. Thanks a lot, Clyde. We'll see you soon.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Yay.
Good night.
Good night. That's
all
wonderful.
All right. Yeah.
He's always,
you know, it's
an excellent guest. It's always
absolutely
a pleasure to have him back. And I will be
so
talking to his wife, and we'll schedule something going on. So the rest of the week, the rest of the month, I should say. Yeah, we're in January. I mean, February. The rest of the month, Maria is going to be taking over, and she'll go, and I don't know what guest is on next week, but I'm sure it'll be very exciting, and it's going to be great. And I'm so happy that she has joined, like I said, she has joined our team and that she's helping both of us out while I get my radio show, have more momentum. She's helping us with Paranormal Horizons. So, yes, it's great to be able to have her help, and it just working, us all collaborating and helping each other and watching Paranormal Horizons grow. So, quickly, anybody who's going to be wanting to look at us and meet us in person, we're going to be Jason, right? Jason, I am going to be
right.
For sure. I will be at the Oregon Ghost Conference, and Clyde Lewis is going to be there, also his wife. So I'm going to have my own booth there. I'm going to be teaching a class, and I believe Clyde is one of the speakers. So it's just going to be one big family. And Jason, you said before, prior to our show, that you were going to plan on coming out on Sunday, correct?
I will go. I'm going to have to work Friday and Saturday.
I won't
going
to hold you here because you're the other half of Paranormal Horizons.
Right.
So it'd be good to have the public see who the other half is. So, yeah, would love to have you there. We'll do live, and it's going to be fun. So it's like I believe on Sunday it's 10 to 5. So we can still have time to go and, you know, have a show afterwards. So, but, yes, come on out, and I would love to have you share responsibilities in being part of Paranormal Horizons and show the public who you are.
I will come out of the shadows so people can see
me
for once.
That's right. That's right. And hopefully we'll have a banner. So that would be great. So that's pretty much about it, folks. And with me, I'm going to do a little quick plug-in. Go ahead and reach us. This coming Wednesday is not going to be our show. Tuesday is Chinese New Year. So I had my cousin from Chicago. We did a show today. It was already pre-recorded, but it will be showing up on podcast this coming Tuesday at 5:30 because it is Chinese New Year. So she talked about, actually, all the little different things about Chinese New Year, about the customs and the foods and the purpose and do's and don'ts and things like that. So it's going to be a very interesting show. And, yes, if you need to get a hold of me, get a hold of me at Facebook, Psychic Medium Sherry, C-H-E-R-I, or you can get me on my website, which is www.psychicmediumsherry.weebly.com, and you can leave a message on the contact form, or you can just contact me on Facebook and ask for a reading, either psychic mediumship or traditional Chinese medicine, medical intuitive reading, or medical qigong therapy. There you go. Yada, yada, yada. There you go. That's it. That's it.
All righty. Well, I did want to say a couple things. I want to thank everybody that takes an active part in the Paranormal Horizons Facebook page. Our reach is really getting out there. I mean, we have nearly 2,000 likes on the Facebook page, but our reach is pretty astounding. I mean, over the course of a week, we're reaching over 12,000 people. So I want to thank everybody that takes an active role in that. And if you haven't already, give us a like on Facebook, at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And with that, we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, and hope everybody has a safe and fantastic week. And I've got a little work cut out for me, Sherry. So on my next days off, Wednesday or Thursday, I'm going to do a new intro, or at the very least update our current one and add Maria on there. So that's my homework for the week. So
Be great. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And then you can that'd be cool. Oh, yeah, I forgot to let people know is my radio station's called Portals to Enlightenment, Your Journey of Body, Mind, and Spirit, which will be just this Tuesday, Chinese New Year at 5:30 Okay, that's it. Yay! So I'll be back first, next Sunday. Not next Sunday, but the first Sunday in March. I will be back.
Very cool. Well, with that, we'll bid everybody adieu. We'll see you next Sunday. I'm going to close the show out with a little promo for Archbishop Ron File. And good night, everyone. Have a safe and fantastic week.
Hey, take care, everybody. Peace.
The Order of Exorcists. Of Exorcists.
There is a lot of good in this world, but with good, you must have the duality of evil. There are dark forces out there. You might not see them or be able to sense them, but they are there, waiting to prey on your weaknesses. If you have a desire to help others in need that are dealing with these dark forces, you can check out the Order of Exorcists under the jurisdiction of Sacred Order of St. Michael the Archangel. The Order of Exorcists is looking for exorcist investigators. You will be trained to make first contact with the clients, conduct interviews and demonic investigations. Once that is completed, you will turn in an assessment for further action. If this sounds interesting to you, you can contact orderofexorcists.weebly.com for more detailed information.